Hello to everyone out there, and welcome to the Common Sense Gospel. My name is Danny Simmons.
And I'm Kurt Norbit.
And we are so glad that you've joined us today. We are truly thankful for those who tune in and listen to us really week by week. It means an awful lot to us, and it is our sincere hope and prayer, and I just as sincerely as I can say it, that the things we've studied and prepared before we present them are done in a way that's pleasing to God first and foremost. But that you would be able to take something from these studies and make application, maybe share them with someone who needs to hear them. And we know so much good comes from that when those things are happening in your personal life. God's word is shared amongst men and women, and the faith that we have is shown to others as we offer those things. And it, all of us play such an important role. And for us to try to present some of these things in the humblest way that we can is very important to us. And we hope and pray that that shows in our presentation, and that we're always open for anyone who's wanting to reach out to us or to have a question, a follow-up question, or maybe even a correction that needs to be made. We want those, and we ask for those, because when that happens, this is iron sharpening iron, and we're becoming stronger in that process, as opposed to, no, we're right, we're always right. That's not going to go well, and it won't serve anyone the way that it should, the way God intends. And so we are available to all of you at commonsensegospel@yahoo.com. If you have a question or concern for us, commonsensegospel@yahoo.com. We'd love to hear from you. Our study today is, why do you test me? And we'll talk about the question that Jesus has given here. It's found in Matthew 22, Mark chapter 12, and Luke 20. We try from time to time to look at questions from Jesus. Kurt and I both believe deeply that there's a lot to be found in those questions. Who's being asked? What is the question? And what can we take from it? In this moment, Matthew 22, Mark 12, Luke 20, the disciples of the Pharisees have come together with the Herodians, and they've come to ask Jesus a question. Matthew, before he gets to the question, says they plotted how they might entangle him in his words. Mark tells us they were trying to catch him in his words. And Luke says they were trying to seize on his words and deliver him to the governor. So with each gospel, we see where their heart is, where their mind is, and why they're actually asking the question about paying taxes. So we'll read from Luke. Luke 20 and verse 20 says, "So they watched him and sent spies who pretended to be righteous, that they might seize on his words in order to deliver him to the power and the authority of the governor. Then they asked him, saying, 'Teacher, we know that you say and teach rightly, and you do not show personal favoritism, but teach the way of God in truth. Is it lawful for us to pay taxes to Caesar or not?' But he," this is Jesus, "perceived their craftiness, and he said to them, 'Why do you test me?'" So what's being said, Kurt? What's happening here?
Well, I think, as always, where I like to start in the study is to understand what it means to test Jesus. Why is he asking them this question? In what way are they testing him? And to test God in general in the scriptures is sinful. There's only one example that I know of, at least, where testing was a positive thing. And it was in Malachi 3:10, when God was disputing with Israel, he actually called on the Jews to test him, to see if he would open the windows of heaven and bless them as abundantly as he desired to do. But that was a call to demonstrate their faith, put their trust in God. If you'll test me in this, then I'll show you I'm worthy of your trust. Because they were, the whole context there in Malachi is, they were basically wanting to do what they wanted to do. They were profaning the sacrifices and what have you. And God is calling on them, turn to me and see how I can bless you. But generally, the kind of testing that the scriptures look at is a questioning of God that is motivated by doubt or opposition to him. For example, we can look in the Old Testament and see that the Jews sinfully put God to the test when they doubted him. In in Deuteronomy chapter 6 at verse 16, Moses is reminding the people of what happened at Massa, which means testing. And that was when the Israelites were out in the wilderness and there was no water, and they went and complained to Moses. And he told them in Deuteronomy 6, you shall not test the Lord your God as you tested him at Massa. Well, what did they do? He called that place Massa in Exodus 17:7, where this incident takes place, because of the contention of the children of Israel, and because they tested the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not? And so what they were doing is they came to the conclusion that because they weren't receiving water the way they thought they should, that God had abandoned them. And they're questioning his reliability because he wasn't meeting their expectations. Did you just bring us out here into the wilderness to die? Where we need water. And we can do that today. For example, when something doesn't go our way, we feel like maybe we deserve a promotion at work, let's say, and we don't get that promotion, and then we blame it on God. We said, well, you know, aren't you here for me or not? Mm-hmm. I deserve this promotion, and I prayed about it, and now you're not giving it to me. And so now we're looking at God bitterly, or perhaps we just turn against him and walk away. But there's a situation where God's not meeting our expectations. And so we start to doubt or proclaim to ourselves that you're not really with me, or you'd help me out in this. So it's kind of an attitude of, you know, you're here to kind of do what I would like you to do, Lord, and it's not happening, so I'm getting upset. And that kind of bleeds over into the second form of testing God, which is what we're going to look at today. And that is where the motive for testing or putting God to the test or calling him into question is from a point of opposition. And the scriptures you just read, we show their motive behind going and listening to Jesus and asking him questions. It wasn't because they were seeking information and that they wanted to learn what does God want us to do in this situation. They were looking for a way to entangle him in his words. They were looking for something that they could seize on to trip him up and that they could take to the governor for a complaint, something that they could use to nullify the influence he was having with the people. And so what we were looking at in the context you read is they came to Jesus demanding a sign. We would see a sign from you. In other words, now they're calling on God to prove himself on their terms. Here's what we would like to see. Then we'll believe that you're from God. We'll accept what you're doing here, which I assert they would not have, because they're coming from the attitude of, we're going to call the shots for God. Here's our list of demands. We expect them to be met. Well, then from your viewpoint, who's in charge here? And this is a problem that the Jews had throughout the Old Testament, and therefore, since that serves as a warning and an example to us, this is a problem we can have.
That's right.
The Jews figured, you know, the temple of God is at Jerusalem, and that's the holy place. That's where God dwells. He would never let anything happen to his dwelling place. And so we can kind of do whatever we want, really, as long as we give God some token recognition. And then if we ever get any in danger, if Jerusalem is threatened or whatever, God won't allow anything to happen because his temple's here. And he, you know, he's not going to allow his dwelling place to be destroyed or defiled. He's not going to be diminished in the eyes of the people. So he'll have to defend Jerusalem to protect the temple. Well, there you are. Here's the situation. God has to respond to it this way. So we're dictating the terms. And of course, that can never be the position we come from. We're never in a position to dictate to God how he should deal with a particular situation,
yeah,
or whether or not he should bow to our interests and do it the way we want, which actually is pretty dangerous, because doing it the way we want is often a way that's going to wind up being destructive for us. So God doesn't do it the way we want in order to protect us from ourselves, showing then he's a merciful God. But there's how we would test God. That's what's putting God to the test. I remember when Jesus was being tempted, the scriptural account there, and Satan told Jesus, cast yourself off this temple here, the pinnacle of the temple, because after all, the word says that the angels will bear you up lest you dash your foot against a stone. Well, what is Satan doing there? He's testing Jesus. He's testing God. He's basically tempting Jesus to test God by making God react to a situation that I'm going to manufacture.
Right.
I'm going to put him in a position where he has to respond this way.
Mm-hmm.
So he's telling Jesus, prove that God's word is true by jumping off this temple so that he'll have to save you. Well, that's, again, not our position. We cannot tell God, here's a situation where, and this is the way you have to act. Because after all, you've made these promises, you've made these statements in scriptures, so now I'm holding you to that. You're going to have to do it this way when I commit this act or go my own way or whatever it is that we're applying this to.
I think Satan's a good example because
he
is one that I don't think any of us would say, well, if Jesus would have done what Satan asked him to do, then Satan would probably be a believer. I don't think any of us think that he would be convinced. He was there to tempt the Son of God. He was not there to become friends with him. And so, again, we have someone who's trying to set a stage, trying to entrap God and saying, you know, your father promised this, so put him in a compromising position and let's see if he comes through. And Jesus says, you shall not tempt the Lord your God, and we are not doing that because he understands the entirety of what the scriptures have to say. And like you said, that's the danger. We can take a passage like in Hebrews 13 that says, that I will never leave you nor forsake you. So like you said, God has to give me my promotion, and then God has to make sure there's groceries on my table, and God has to make sure my children are safe every time they leave my home, and God has to, you know, we can create all kind of a list because he works for us.
Yeah.
And he said he's never going to leave me or forsake me. So, you know, he's kind of bound to his own word to do what I tell him to do. And obviously, in that extreme scenario, that is not true. Even in the text of Hebrews 13, and that's what I would just encourage people to do, is go back and read the place that you think he's promising to perform tricks for you to make your life easier or better. In that context, in that verse, Hebrews 13:5 says, let your conduct be without covetousness. Uh-oh. Be content with such things as you have, for he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. They're together. Be content with where you are and what you have right now, and trust in God, because he will never leave you or forsake you. It's not a promise to give me everything I can think up that I want. It is a promise from God that's of an eternal nature. He is with us, and we are to hold fast to him, not to test him or to tempt him, but to realize that we're being tested, just as the Israelites were, you mentioned, in the wilderness. Moses tells them later, God tested you. He led you around 40 years and tested you, and they failed. Then they tried to test him in their test. And they said,
and
well,
they failed.
and God's like, I'm not being tested. You know, you're being tested. So we get that backwards a lot of the times in our life. And, you know, we've used some very simple examples, but it's so easy, I think, to fall into that trap. We do need his help, and we do wish he would do certain things for us, maybe to make things smoother or to lighten up the pressure, to be less sorrowful about the things that are going on in a current moment in my life. But his promise is still there. He's not going to leave me or forsake me. And I can commune with him when I step into his word.
Yeah, and there in Hebrews 13:5, it's to me, it's analogous to what we were looking at in Malachi 3:10. There in Hebrews, he's calling on his people to have faith.
Yep.
Be content with things you have. Trust me. Why? Because I've said I'll never leave you or forsake you. Yeah, I'll take care of you. It may not be the way you think, but But that's where faith comes in.
Right.
God will do what's right for me, and I just need to wait for that.
And the realization of that for us is what he wants to see work out in our lives, that I completely trust in that. I believe it. I depend on it. He'll do what's best for me in my life, and I trust him, and I live by his word, and everything's in line with what Almighty God has laid out for us. It's a much better place to be. So the person, we've talked about this some before, but I have to go back there because, okay, show us a sign. You know, that always bothers me because I think all of us think that if I saw a sign today, I mean, what would that do for my faith? I think I would be stronger because God actually has done something right in front of my eyes that I know beyond the shadow of a doubt was directly from him. But as you look through the Bible, you'll see that God actually has done that many times over for many different groups of people. And their faith doesn't seem to be strengthened at all by that. How many times does God tell the Israelites throughout the Old Testament, remember when I freed you from bondage in Egypt? I mean, he repeats that over and over and over again. And not only was the first generation not terribly enthusiastic about those powerful and amazing miracles. Can you imagine darkness over all of Egypt and the land of Goshen has light?
Yeah.
The darkness was so thick it could be felt, you know, that they could not see the hand in front of their own eyes, the Egyptians. And over in Goshen, the Israelites are fine. And there's light, there is no darkness. God can do whatever he wants, and that's what he chose to do. When they left Egypt, I mean, how many minutes is it before they go, oh, we know what you're doing. You brought us out here to kill us. You know, it's like, what in the world? What is your problem? The miracles did not help them with their faith.
No. And in fact, it's, you know, when you were looking at this point, which I think is a good one for us, Jesus answers their request for a sign. He says, an evil and adulterous generation asks for a sign, and no sign will be given it except the sign of Jonah the prophet.
I don't want that one.
What's that? Stuck in a fish? Well, yeah. As he was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the fish, so the Son of Man will be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. And so my answer to that is, you have been given a sign.
That's right.
It's the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And if that's not enough, then there's no other sign that can be given.
That's right.
If you won't believe based on that sign, because that's the fulfillment of the request, here's the sign that would be given you, then there's no other sign that can be given that is going to encourage you to believe or strengthen your faith.
And that one sign he promised was given to them. The soldiers came to them and
said,
an angel rolled the stone away and he was not in there. And so they said, here's some money. Here's the story you're going to tell. His disciples stole the body. And if any authorities come, we'll handle them. The sign was given, but it's not what they wanted. They wanted something else. And because he didn't perform for them, they refused to believe. It's just amazing that he says, here's the one sign you're going to get. And I would think they'd say, okay, let's write this down, fellas, because when it happens or when it comes, then we'll have the sign that he promised. It was hand-delivered to them. And they said, nope, not taking
it. That's putting God to the test. Yeah. Oh, okay, sign of Jonah, I got it now. But that's still not good enough.
Nope.
I want to see my name written in skywriting letters. You know, no airplane up there. I want God to carve his name on the side of that hill over there, and then I'll believe. No,
you
because
won't.
You don't believe the signs he's already given you that are of a much more powerful and enduring nature.
That's right.
He's not going to follow a circus act to make you feel better. If you're not going to accept the signs he's already given, he could do exactly what you demand of him, and that's still is not going to satisfy you.
Isn't all of what we're talking about, isn't it the beauty of the hymn that we sing, Count Your Blessings? Because if you are asked to count, to sit down and count your blessings, then it removes this, well, show me something else. You know, it's like you can't end up in that place.
How much time do we have during a day to, if we're going to start listing all of God's blessings, we better clear our agenda.
That's right.
You know, clear my calendar. I've got one task to do, and it's going to take me a while.
That's right. And that, it helps us because we should be content with that, the such things as we have, and to trust in God. And there's a test there for us, certainly. We're being tested, but because our faith and our love for him has to be shown and worked out in our lives. His love has been shown and demonstrated, like you said, by that eternal weight of the resurrection and what that means for us and how much he loved us to die in such a terrible way. That's all been laid down for us. It's as solid as it could possibly be. And now it's up to us to say, test me, Lord. David says that. Test my heart and know me.
Yeah.
Search me out. Find those things that shouldn't be there. Help me get rid of those. That is such a great, humble heart that we have to appreciate in the Bible.
And I was just, think about it. If I'm in a position where I can dictate to God, here's what I want you to do to help me or make me believe or whatever. Do we really want to serve a God like that? Is he really God if he's bowing to our every whim? Here's how I want you to do it. Okay, I'll do that.
Please believe in me.
Yeah, so now we're in charge.
Yeah.
Man, I don't want to be my own God because I'm ignorant. I'm weak. I'm fallible. I'm limited. If I am given that kind of authority and power, I know it's going to corrupt me. And so I'm thankful that God's not going to do that. He doesn't want me to be corrupted like that.
No.
And so he's going to gently remind him, no, Kurt, I am sovereign. I'm God here, not you. I'm the one in charge because I know what's going on. I've got the whole picture, and I have the power to take care of it. You just need to wait and trust me.
Yeah.
I love when, and oftentimes when I'm trying to get myself in the right frame of mind to pray, and, you know, just get rid of the world's distractions and everything for a minute. When through the prophets, the prophet said, God is on his throne. Let the earth keep silence before him. That needs to be our prayer before God. Not, Lord, here's my list of to-dos for the day. It's, I need to go before his throne and keep silence and let him do his will.
That's right, because he's got us right where we're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And that's a far better place to begin our conversation with him than, you need to put me over here, so, you know, then we'll both be happy. It's short-sighted. His ways are higher than our ways. His thoughts are higher than our thoughts. And we have to trust him in that. He knows all things all the way around us, our lives from beginning to end. And we can be grateful that he's preserved us to this moment. I mean, that, like you said, and we count our blessings, there's a lot going on there that we can kind of settle down and get back to where we need to be and rededicate ourselves to just look for opportunities to serve God with the time that we have.
Yeah, we really need to be careful when we're praying to God and we're asking for things. What's our motive? If it's starting to look like it's about me, Lord, I want you to do this, and it's really important. And if you don't, well, there's going to be consequences. I'm going to leave you. Oh, my. I'm sure God's impressed with that threat.
Who's
getting
have.
Hurt there?
Yeah, you've already left God. Yeah. You're saying things like
you're not
that.
Hurting God. Well, you are hurting God because he hates to see someone respond like that because he knows the danger that it puts them in. But you're the one that's getting hurt. We need to simply keep silence. We're not in a position to dictate to God. We can't demand things from him. We can pray just like Jesus did. Take this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. Well, there's something Jesus wanted, but he didn't demand it. He said, if there's a way, Father, take this cup from me. But the priority, the bottom line of it all is, let your will be done, because you know best.
That's right. And he, you know, it's interesting with that prayer because in all of his life, he was perfectly obedient to the Father. He was without sin. He was perfectly obedient. And the Hebrew writer says that he learned obedience through the cross.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's just amazing to me that it was in the darkest place of his suffering, that obedience. And however that was accomplished, the Hebrew writer tells us he learned obedience there. And so, man, we got a long way to go.
Yes.
And we don't want to be testing God in things like Jesus would have could have said something blasphemous in that moment to say, you know what, I have a decision to make in this as well, and I'm not on board anymore or what have you. He honored God entirely, and it was for us to see and to take note of and say, that's what I need to do. And for us, it's just the small things, isn't it?
Yeah. I was just thinking as you were running through those thoughts, how did Jesus respond, for example, when Satan told him, let's put God to the test and see if you are the Son of God, cast yourself down from this temple and make him rescue you. Well, Jesus' answer was, it is written. And that should always be where we're looking.
That's right.
When we're beseeching God, when we are accepting his invitation to bring to him our supplications and our petitions and our prayers, the final thing is, it is written. What do your scriptures say? What is your will, Lord? Let that be done.
That's right.
And like you pointed out from Hebrews 13:5, there's a responsibility we have. It's not, okay, Lord, here's my list. See if you can take care of it by 5 today. It's you be content. So there's something on my part that I need to be taking care of with God's help and God's strength. I need to be doing this and then let God take care of the rest. I think you brought up a good point there out of Hebrews 13. That's a beautiful thought. We have confidence in that prayer. He will not forsake us or leave us. So let's just trust in that. We don't need to be making demands of God. We cannot put him to the test because he's proven himself already.
That's right.
And he just wants us to trust him in that. So that's really what he wants, is to accept his word by faith. We don't need to be seeking a sign or, you know, do this, Lord, and then I'll really believe in you. And, you know, if I get that promotion at work, that's looking good. And then you're going to have a real useful servant on your hands here. Well, he's going to have to take care of some things first, I think, if you're in that situation. If you really want to be a useful servant, then that's something that's going to have to change.
That's right. Was there a third thing from the testing that you wanted to address?
No, I think it's important to just look at, as I'm seeking things from the Lord, when I'm asking him for things, what's my motive? That's really it. If it's from a me viewpoint, then we're in danger of putting God to the test. We cannot be doubting his willingness to help us, and we cannot be in opposition to him. As we mentioned, those are the only two real reasons. Those are the motives behind testing God. I don't think you can do this, or I don't think you're with me, or I don't like your position on this, and so I'm demanding that you accommodate a change. And we see that in the doctrinal world, for example. There's so many, like we've discussed in the recent past, on what I need to do to be saved. Well, there are several different answers out there in the religious world. And really, there's only one that's valid, and that's God's way of being saved.
That's right.
So anything else is basically trying to entangle Jesus in his words. We're in opposition. And we want God to say what we want him to say and not necessarily what he is saying. And so we'll go to the words of Jesus and look for a way to trip him up.
Yep.
We'll look for a way to nullify that and say, well, it's not going to really be that way, Lord, in my situation.
Right.
Because here's what I want it to be.
Yep.
So let's kind of rework this. Let's massage the wording a little bit, so that we can be in agreement on this. Let's make a compromise.
Yes, and that does happen in studies with some who are, like you said, that they want to see a certain outcome, you read the Bible verses that you have. It's very clear. The doctrine, the instruction is very clear. And sometimes it just, especially if someone's not liking what that conclusion is, you both kind of know what it is already, even though you haven't hammered it home, you can see in their eyes that they understand. And typically the response that I've found is just, well, if you were there, you know, if you knew how hard that was for me, which again, we're giving ourselves a different compartment that's not in the scripture, that, you know, that Jesus doesn't say, this is what you should do. Unless you had a really tough time, then, you know, never mind. I don't want to mess up your life or anything. That's never what Jesus says. It is a matter of fact. This is the way that it is. This is how you serve and please God. And I hate moments like that because I know they're asking what the truth is. That's why they're talking to you about it. The Bibles are open. Everything so far is working the way it should. But you get to a point where they say, but you don't understand what I went through, you know. I said, well, you know, I don't. It would be a mistake for me to pretend to, and it would be a mistake for me to hit you too hard with these verses, but they say what they say. And so I typically will just encourage people, you know, go home and read through them again for yourself and look at that, and you speak to the Lord. And instead of asking me for permission, ask God, is it still okay? I've read this with you, and you've given it to me. Is it still okay if I do this? And usually people, you know, they with an honest heart, they say, okay, it's just not here. I can't do that. It's not, God does not approve. But they're gonna have to do some deep searching of their own heart and, you know, what their intentions are. I want God to do this for me. Typically it's a self-serving thing. We want to guard ourselves against that because it is testing God.
Yep. And as you said, when someone says, well, you just don't understand what I've been through. I don't. And I'm not going to try to act like I do. But God does understand.
That's right.
And
he was there.
He knows he was there.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows the pain of your heart. He knows your situation more clearly than you do, really, because our emotions are going to cloud the way we look at things. God can be dispassionate and look at it completely objectively.
Mm.
And that's where he wants our faith to come in. I do understand. Let me help you take care of it. I'm there for you.
Yeah.
But it needs to be my way. Because that's the best way.
It is.
That's the way it will truly be resolved. Because God sees it clearly. He has the solution. He has the answer. Just trust him and accept that answer and let him work it out.
That's right. Yeah, so no matter what it is, just think about the question that Jesus asked. And again, these are for people who are spiritually minded, who are honestly seeking God's will and his way for their life, that if you find yourself in a situation and you say, Lord, can I do this? Should I be here? Is it right for me to spend time with these people? Or whatever the case is, listen closely. If he's saying to you, why do you test me? You know, because we know his word, and he's saying, why are you still trying to find a way to get this done that you know shouldn't be? Or why are you requesting, as you said earlier, signs or extra things for you personally, self-preservation and those kind of things? Why are you requesting that from me, knowing that every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, from the Father of lights, with whom there's no variation or shadow of turning? God's not partial. He's consistent. He lets the sun and the rain shine and fall on the just and the unjust. He's perfect in the way that he does that. So I think the biggest thing for me personally is just stop thinking too highly of myself where I feel like I'm a special case. You know, this is special. I'm special. This moment is special just because I'm here. You know, that kind of thinking always gets me in trouble. And the reality of it is that there's been thousands of people go through the same thing that I'm experiencing this day.
Yeah.
Now it's what do I do with it? How do I handle it? Do I trust God or do I demand a sign?
Let's keep God in front of us. And let him have his place, which is first place. And things will be taken care of.
And if we do it that right, then I'm a faithful servant.
Yeah, that's right. You are being a faithful servant.
That's all I need to do.
And that's all you need to do. that's right.
Such a load off.
Yes.
I don't need to make deals with
this.
Just
do
what
I need to
do. The
peace of Christ passes all understanding.
That's right. It'll be okay.
Give our anxieties to him.
Yes, sir. Amen. Well, I have trivia questions. If you have trivia questions or, you know, I understand if you want to go home? Or
well, I can be trivial.
Oh, I know that.
Good, Danny. You're figuring me out, in other words. Huh?
Yes, sir. I think I asked first last time.
Okay. You want me to fire the first shot across the bow then?
Yeah. Just remember, there's other people listening, and you know, you're firing at them so you better be nice to us.
I'll be kind.
Trivia. Sweet trivia.
Here's my move. We know from the Old Testament that there were capital cases, capital sins, which required capital punishment. For example, idolatry or whatever. In those capital cases, what did the law require in regard to witnesses?
The law required that there must be two or more. I feel like two or three may have been said a couple of times in that. Is that right, or is it just there's got to be two or more? There's
right.
Plurality of witnesses.
Yeah. Let there be two or three witnesses, but the idea is, he said, there shall never be just one witness to bring this kind of condemnation
right.
on a person.
And the testimony has to match. The two witnesses
yes.
must bring the same testimony.
Yep, the testimony has to agree. And interestingly enough, and this is just a extra credit for you, if you wanted to take a shot at one other requirement for the witnesses.
Oh, man, I don't know.
It's in regards to the execution of the punishment.
Oh, they have to cast the first stone,
right.
or they have to be involved in the
witnesses cast the first stone, and then everybody else joins in.
And that is the wisdom of God.
Yep. So
you're
going to
stand in front of
this.
Your whole city and throw a rock at a guy that you know is innocent.
Yeah.
You know, it's a safety measure, isn't it? Because yeah. man.
Plus, everybody, since they are directly involved, is going to receive the lesson from that situation.
Yes, that's right.
Ooh, I'm not going to do that.
That's right.
So yes, it's out of Deuteronomy chapter 17, verses 6 and 7. There always had to be a plurality of witnesses, two or more. The witness or the testimony had to agree, and then the witnesses were to cast the first stone.
Oh, man. Wow. What a yeah. tough thing to go through.
Yeah.
Okay. Question number one for you and others. That's question two, actually, ultimately. The first three miracles that Moses performed before Pharaoh were also performed by Pharaoh's magicians. What were they? What were the first three miracles? Notice I didn't say plagues. That's my only hint I'm going to give to you. First three miracles that Moses performed that the magicians were able to duplicate.
One was casting your staff on the ground and watching it turn into a snake.
Yep.
The second was turning water to blood.
Yes, sir.
And the third was producing frogs.
Nice. That's right. The third
Which,
miracle.
What kind of
frogs.
A benefit is it with my magicians to make even more frogs? I don't need you to do that.
The way that's written out, it says the magicians also brought frogs forth from the earth. And the very next verse says, then Pharaoh told Moses, hey, you got to get rid of this
Can
plague.
You do something here?
Please ask God. So, yeah, that was not a favor. But they were showing that, hey, you know, this is no big
yeah,
deal.
You're
we
no,
can do this.
Your God's no big deal.
That's right. We
Except
can do this
that God's snake ate up all theirs, but, you know. That's a minor issue, I guess.
Yes, in the rod turning to snake, all theirs turned to snakes, Aaron's rod swallowed up all of the magician's snakes or rods. That is, man, imagine watching that.
That's in Exodus, right?
That's right. In the next plague, the third plague, the fourth miracle was the lice. And in the lice, the magicians couldn't do it, and they say to Pharaoh, this is the finger of God.
They admitted it.
So rod to snakes, Genesis 7:12, water to blood, Genesis 7:22, frogs being brought forth from the earth, Exodus 8 and verse 7, the third plague, this is the finger of God, is Exodus 8 and verse 19. Man, that's really good. You had all three. That's impressive. What's my second question?
Okay, this is also Old Testament. Joshua got involved in a battle with the Amorites in order to protect the Gibeonites. In that battle, what miracle did Joshua request?
Did the sun stand still over the Valley of Ajalon?
That's right. Yep, the sun stood still for a day so that vengeance could be executed on the enemies of God's people. That's right. Joshua chapter 10, verses 12 and 13. And in fact, that passage says no such occurrence ever happened again where God listened to the words of a man in such a way.
That's right. Neither before nor after.
Yep. So, yep, the sun shining all day.
Awesome.
Good job.
So the recording of this podcast is February 7th, 2023. I'm going through my Bible readings and just finished the book of Joshua.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit fresh on my mind.
But there you go.
I didn't cheat, man. I'm doing
good things. See,
to do.
So that daily Bible reading can, when you're playing Bible trivia, you've got a leg up.
if they ask you a question of what you just read, that's really nice.
You're looking good.
All right, final question of the day. Are you ready?
Drum roll, please.
Okay, here we go. Let's do it this way. Okay. Here's the first two words of the question.
Oh, here we go.
Two women. What do you think the question is?
Two women. It could be Naomi and Ruth. It could be Hannah and
Peninnah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could be a lot of combinations. So
Euodia and Syntyche.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's none of those. You're wrong.
Oh well. Okay. Time to go home.
No, hold on. That wasn't the trivia question. Here we go.
Did anyone out there get the question?
We're about to find out. Yeah.
If
I said two women,
there's more to this.
What did you think it was? All right.
But
here we
wait,
go.
There's more.
And this is it. Two women who both had sons at the same time and were living together come to Solomon. One woman rolled over on her son at night, and he died. She switched her dead son with the other woman's living son that same night. Both women come to Solomon and claim the living son as their own child. How did Solomon discover who the true mother was?
He ordered that the child be cut in half and a half be given to each one of the women. And then the one who showed compassion was obviously going to be the one who is the child's mother.
That's right.
You know, let the child live and give him to her. Instead of the reaction of the other woman was, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's take care of it.
Can't believe how foolish she was to say, yeah, cut him in two, then we both get half. That makes sense.
That's going to really make things better for us.
And the mother of the living child said, give the child to her.
Yeah, let the child live. And so Solomon was going by the response, and he said, this is the child's mother.
That's right.
Give him to her.
Because the Bible also says, it's in parentheses, but says that they were out of DNA tests at that time.
Yeah.
My Bible says
I guess they had to be brought up from Sheba and the supply chain problems. You know. It's one thing I like about that incident, too, is that when the word got out that this is how Solomon solved this particular riddle, you know, how did he determine what was right here? The people were duly impressed.
All of them.
And that's when his fame as the wisest man on earth really took hold and began to grow.
That's right. And that was not from him. That was from God.
That is, yep. That wisdom was given at his request from God.
That's right.
Yeah. Ask of me and whatever you want, I'll give it to you.
Very good. So, you know, I think with this study and a good way to conclude all of this, you know, why do you test me? We are going to come into situations in our life, whether we're investigating the scriptures for our own personal answers, or there's a loved one who's come to us, they know that we read and study scripture and they really want us to help them and they're wanting to hear something that just isn't from the Lord. It's just good for us to just imagine that we would stand before Jesus and say, you know, Lord, this is my friend. This is the scenario as they've given it to me. This is the best I understand it. Can they do this or what would you have us to do in this matter? To make sure that Jesus does not reply by saying, why do you test me? Why are you bringing this to me? You know the answer. I hope that helps us, you know, settle down in the moment and say, here is the revealed word of God. This is his instruction for all of us. And the standard is always the same. Do that which is right. And you'll be blessed in that effort. Such a great response. It's not always easy to say, but it's the right thing to say. And it's the best help we can provide the people that we love or even for ourselves. So let's make it our aim to do that and never hear back from Jesus, why do you test me?